Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. Today's episode is a interview that I did with Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post, incidentally, as he was driving across the country to move to the Bay Area to cover the Golden State Warriors this year. So part of our conversation is about that, about him being, you know, more of a national writer who is coming here, and it really does center on a couple of different ideas. The expectations for this year, which is a topic that I would like to hit a lot in the next month before the season starts. Some of the potential challengers to the Warriors, both in the near term and in a little bit of the longer term. And then some broader picture stuff on the collective bargaining agreement and where he thinks it might be going, because Tim is one of the smartest, most well-connected guys I know on that topic of where we might be going there. And so I threw some of my ideas off him, and he has plenty of his own as well. So conversation runs a little bit short of an hour. There could be a couple things in it that are a little bit out of date because it was recorded a week ago, but it should be pretty clean on that sort of thing. So hope you really enjoy it. Thanks for coming on again.
No problem, man. Happy to do it. You helped me get through this cross-country drive, so I appreciate the conversation along the way.
Not a problem. So it's a weird thing to think about with this team just because there are so many different ways to parse it, but we'll start really broadly. Are there any real specific expectations you have for this season? Like, if you want to say it's defining success or just something you expect to see this year?
Well, I mean, look, the season's going to go a certain way, right? Like, if the Warriors have to win a championship. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And if they don't win a championship, it's a colossal disappointment on par with any in the history of the league. I mean, they are the overwhelming favorites for a reason. And if they don't win a championship, it's a disappointment like few ever have been. So the stakes are pretty high. I mean, regular season wise, you know, could they win 70 games again? Sure. Will they? Probably not. They'll probably win 65 or so and kind of take their foot off the gas for a while. But to me, the expectations for them are as high as any team in the history of the league. They should win a title, and frankly, they have to win a title because, you know, this whole season is going to be a referendum on Kevin Durant and his decision to go there. And if they anything less than a championship is going to be completely unacceptable for anybody who is analyzing them objectively when you look at the talent they have and the way that team came together.
Normally, I would say that sort of an edict or an understanding would be unfair, but I agree with you. And the reason for it is something that struck me during the playoffs last year. So I had kind of had these thoughts. I do radio hits with some regularity in the Bay Area, and I had always cautioned people about, you know, appreciate 73 for what it is, and you never know what can happen. And so the part of that was basically that I always understood that this team was not impervious to injury, you know, that something could happen, and Monty Unis's sweat made it happen. You know, like Stephen Curry slipped on that, and he never made it back to 100%. If I had to ballpark it, I've said since it happened that he was about 70 to 80% for the finals and most of that playoff run. And that's not an excuse. That's just explaining what happened. But why that matters is because Kevin Durant's presence makes that even that level of an injury, if it's a single person, survivable.
Yeah, that's why they went and got him. I mean, that was the whole point of getting Kevin Durant, was to have insurance if one of their guys gets hurt. Because now you've got Thompson, Kevin Durant, and, you know, if you've got two of those three guys going to maximum effort and health, you're probably going to be able to beat just about any team. And if you have all three of them, you have to be able to beat any team. So, yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, if you win 73 games, then you go get Kevin Durant with only losing Harrison Barnes and Andrew Bogut, and you can go sign Zaza Pachulia for $2 million. You know, there's no excuses. They are by far the best team in the league, and they should roll to a title. And if they don't, you know, like I said, it really is, I think, one of the great disappointments in the history of the league. I mean, that That's the level you set yourself up for when you go get a guy like him. They could have just signed Harrison Barnes and rolled it back, and you know, that might not have been the case. But, yeah, so when you have all those guys and you have all that talent, you have to cash in on it. You know, this isn't even like the Heat, where the Heat had three guys and no depth back in 2010, that first season, when they only had Shane Battier, they had Mike Miller and Udonis Haslem before they got Shane Battier, and they had those, you know, later they got Ray Allen, and they had those other depth guys around them. You know, that first year they had, you know, Mike Miller and Udonis Haslem both got hurt right away, and then they had a bunch of end-of-the-road stiffs on the end of the roster. And, you know, not only do the Warriors have four guys instead of three, they've got four or five really good role players around them, and Iguodala and Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston and David West and Zaza Pachulia. Like, they've got depth that Heat team didn't have. So, to me, there's no excuse. They have to win the championship, and nothing else is gonna be acceptable when you look at the talent they have that they can put out on the court.
The other major factor that has to be both acknowledged and considered is that the top end of the West got weaker with Tim Duncan retiring and the Spurs not being what they were, you know, and the Thunder not being what they were.
Well, I was going to say, right, forget that. The team that by all rights really should have beat them in the Western Conference Finals lost their best player. I mean, that to me was the biggest thing about Durant going to the Warriors. It was even less Durant going to the Warriors than we should have had Thunder Warriors the next 3 years in the Conference Finals. That should have been a titanic battle year after year. And instead, it's the Warriors are kind of in a walk. And that to me was almost a bigger impact of Durant leaving than him going to Golden State. It's that you just completely eliminated a title contender, which, you know, that doesn't happen very often. You know, to have a team drop levels like that, because you just don't see guys leave those teams very often. And it long term, that's probably the biggest ramification from this whole decision, is that what it did to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, there was a conversation, because as you would guess, and as you know personally, as listeners would guess, the Durant to the Warriors topic was discussed in the media room a lot. And a lot of times it was with me, for obvious reasons. And one of the conversations that particularly Ethan Sherwood-Strauss and I had a lot, and I got his permission to write a piece about, but never ended up doing because things come in the way, was about the idea of it kind of being a form of deterrence. And so the concept was, even for those, in some ways like my podcast partner Nate Duncan, who were more skeptical of Durant on the Warriors from a fit perspective, the argument that was always the silver bullet against that, in terms of fit and all that, and those are legitimate concerns, I'm not trying to dissuade those, is that by getting Kevin Durant, you prevent him from being anywhere else. And the idea that Durant was going to go to a competitive team, whether that be Oklahoma City or somebody else, and create a team that was more dangerous for you than anything else, had to have been a part of the consideration, because, you know, the Warriors did upset the apple cart. The team won 73 games last year. And the reason why you do that, and in my opinion, why you do that, even if they had won the championship, should Durant have been interested, is because you avoid anybody else, or at least probably anybody else, making their own super team.
Yep, totally agree. I mean, that's why, you know, if you can go get a guy like Kevin Durant, you go get him and you figure it out later. And, you know, now we see this Warriors team, and not only are they a monster, but they also, you know, eliminated probably their greatest threat. I mean, you know, the Thunder, I think the Thunder were better than the Cavs last year.
They were.
I think if that Thunder team was back this year with Steven Adams, another year older and better, and some of the other guys they had around, I think they might have been better than the Warriors this year. You know, that team was really well built to take them down, I think, this year, or certainly give them as much trouble as anybody in the league, if not take them down. And now, obviously, with Durant gone, they're not a factor, and now the Warriors have, I think, a very clear path to the finals. And like I said before, I think that's going to be the lasting legacy of that decision, is that they kneecapped the team that was most likely to keep them from going to the finals the next 2 or 3 years.
And it might even be a bigger spillover than that, depending on what happens with Russell Westbrook, because if he leaves, then, you know, assuming he doesn't go to another Western Conference power, which he could, then you have that sort of an issue, and, you know, he re-signed with them. But it also goes into this really just kind of strange ancillary spot, because you made your team so much stronger. But actually, the point where I wanted to go originally was there is a big lesson to be taken from this whole saga, and it was a lesson that was not new to either one of us. And this is not going to sound like a Warriors point originally, but if I monologue for long enough, it'll get there, which is the idea of ownership needing to be willing to spend to keep a great thing together. And in my opinion, the Durant thing all goes back to James Harden and them letting him go for what, as much as other people want to claim, was primarily money stuff. And when you look at LeBron going back to Cleveland, part of what opened the door for that was Mickey Arison not being willing to pay the luxury tax for Mike Miller, who, as you said, was one of the first big addition to the big three. And that is a lesson, if there's one thing to be taken away from this part of the process for Lakeup and Peter Guber, it is don't scrimp now, because you just do what you can. They're not even going to be a tax team this year, because that is the stupidest reason to lose a great team.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, you know, I am curious to see what happens next summer. I don't think it's as quite as certain that the Warriors stay together after this season than I think a lot of people think. For a variety of reasons, I think that the CBA could be constructed in a way that makes it very difficult for them to keep both Durant and Curry when their contracts are up, unless one of them is willing to take less than they can get elsewhere. So there's stuff like that that could happen. But yeah, I mean, look, if you have a team that has a chance to win, then you should be throwing all the money you can at it to try to win that. I mean, that because. Unless you're not in it to win, that's the whole point. And, you know, I agree. I think, you know, the Harden trade has been dissected on a lot of levels. I agree it was a very bad trade. And I think, you know, as I wrote right after Durant made his decision, that was one of about a dozen things that broke just the wrong way for the Thunder and lined up for them to end up losing him. But I think the better example and the more prescient example for what the Warriors have is that Heat team. Because when they did let Mike Miller go, that began sowing the seeds for everybody leaving. Because like the Heat kept talking about family and we're a family and we're doing all this stuff together. And if everybody else is sacrificing and the owner isn't, the players are going to notice that. And there's no question that if Joe Lacob, especially in light of some of the stuff he has said about, you know, being light years ahead and kind of maybe underplaying the importance of that, of getting lucky with the Steph Curry contract, you know, if they don't pony up and spend while they've got that Steph Curry contract in their pocket, you know, that's the kind of thing that maybe when his contract is up could come back to haunt them a little bit.
And a factor that really goes into this more so part with the Miami example is that teams in the Warriors situation, presumably, and Miami situation definitely, have very narrow avenues to get better. You know, like even in the case of Cleveland, who after they got LeBron actually had more flexibility than almost anybody ever because of things like the Brendan Haywood contract and other things of that nature, because they also had some of their guys like Kyrie were still so cheap, is that you don't have a lot of ways to get better. So all you have to do is spend what you can, do like what they did this summer. You know, the only shortcoming they did with that this year was the possibility, as Nate put really well on Dunked On, about spending on guys like James Michael McAdoo to basically create a human trade exception. But those guys might not have been cool with that, and that gets into kind of the cap nerd land as opposed to the human land in a way. But so really, realistically, there aren't that many ways for the Warriors to spend their money. So just don't make any stupid mistakes. And even if you go down swinging, like let's say you spend and the guy and you mess up, that to the players looks a whole heck of a lot better than doing some sort of cheap move that obviously is meant to save yourself money.
Guys are always gonna recognize you trying to get better and spending money. Like it might not work out. But it's always they're going to be cool if you're trying to do stuff to help them out.
Like Mark Cuban's a good example of this.
Yes, it's a great example.
And that also goes into things like the facilities and everything else. You know, there are a lot of things that go into a player's day to day that are team spending that do not count in terms of the salary cap. And people like me focus on the salary cap because it's something that we know, fortunately, through great people like Eric Pincus. A lot of the information is public, so we can actually work with it, and it's what makes a team. But ownership, when you get into a circumstance like the Warriors or the Cavs, has an obligation to get all the little things right because they can.
Yeah, whether it's training facilities, spending and building new training facilities, or spending money on medical, whether it's getting players back on the court or keeping them healthy, whether it's paying for the right kind of food, whether it's the right kind of travel stuff, whether it's building out your coaching staff or your front office with extra personnel to work on guys or find guys. You know, teams have to work with the constraints of the salary cap to pay their own players, but they don't have to work within it to pay their coaching staffs or their front offices or to build the best facilities or any of that kind of stuff. And so, it's just a matter of how much the ownership is willing to spend to try to have the best in all those categories. And that's all stuff that players notice. And that's why you see all these teams doing all that stuff, getting shooting coaches and building training facilities and doing all this preventative stuff and finding all these ways to maximize their dollar as best they can. And that's kind of what the new arms race in the NBA has become. And that's where you see, teams want to try to impress players. And you do that by going above and beyond in the ways that you can, where you're not constrained by the cap.
This also makes sense as the next arms race because of the way that the collective bargaining agreement apportions revenue. So players, people have talked about how crazy the salary cap is going, and that's justifiable. The cap has gone up substantially the last couple of years, but the reason that's happened is because of the increase in television revenue, and the players only get half of that. So if you want to think about it from another perspective, outside of choosing these sort of things to spend more money on than they were before, owners are getting the other half, and their spending constraints aren't really that high on the other side of it. So spending this money, if the players know they have it, because it's pretty obvious with everything else that's happened. And so if they're, kind of pocketing it, especially when their team is good, it makes it even more obvious for the players to notice.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, the way the money's coming into the game all the way around, you got to spend more on players, you got to spend more on facilities, you got to spend more on everything because there's a lot more money to spend. So, it all ends up going hand in hand in the end.
Right now, plenty will change between now and April, but who would you say in the Western Conference is the biggest threat to the Warriors in a 7-game series?
The Warriors. That's it.
That's fair.
There isn't a team. There's not a team that should be that should be remotely competitive with them in a series.
Okay, so among the other teams, let's put it that way then.
Sure. I mean, look, I think it all depends. Like, the Spurs are probably the second best team still. I think they signed Pau Gasol to try to remain as good as possible this year while knowing they probably had no chance to really win a title. And they'll probably win 60 or so games and be very good because Pau is still very good at certain things and can be a really good player for them in the regular season. The Clippers, probably will be the third best team, but the Clippers also, they have Blake Griffin is coming off some pretty serious injuries. Can he recover? Is Chris Paul going to stay at the same level or as a smaller point guard? Does he just kind of go off a cliff? You tend to see with small guards, they tend to decline pretty rapidly. I mean, 2 years ago, Tony Parker was MVP of the finals, and or I guess, yeah, 2 years ago, he was MVP of the finals, and now he's kind of a he's a starter, but he's probably an average starter at best, and he's in kind of that same age range as Chris Paul. So how long can Chris Paul stay at that level? And then you've got a lot of intriguing younger teams, whether it's Oklahoma City or the Jazz or Minnesota or the Blazers, all teams that could be somewhere in that mix to maybe finish third or fourth or fifth, but they don't have the horses to come anywhere near competing with those teams at the top.
Here's what I'll say. It's not the Clippers. And there's a specific reason for that.
Right.
And it's that they don't have anybody to put on Kevin Durant. So the Clippers are a very good team. I could see them being the second best team in the West. I could see them making the conference finals. But if I were to rank teams specifically through the lens of the Warriors, the Clippers are great, but their strengths aren't really there. And also the other harsh reality for them, if you want to think about it this way, is that some of their flaws against the Warriors are correctable but will not be corrected. And the most obvious one of that is if Doc actually starts staggering Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin anchoring their second unit in the way that I've argued the Warriors should do with Durant would be something the Warriors would have a lot of trouble handling. Unless Kevon Looney really comes on, they don't have another guy, and Blake Griffin can be a big part of their offense, especially considering they often play Austin Rivers at the one, and he's more of an off-ball guy than an on-ball guy. But we have to use the evidence that we have in front of us, and Doc has not been willing to do that. And, you know, he could change. Nothing is set in stone. The beauty of sport is that it is unpredictable, and that even when you think you know something, it is not definite. But all of that matters. All of that is the precedent that we have to work from. And that is a big part of it, too. So you have that. Chris Paul is a huge player. And, like, I mean, I think that it was so notable how the Clippers fell off in that series against the Blazers once he got hurt. And, like, that was really what set them apart. DeAndre is a wonderful player, but he's a complimentary guy. And Chris Paul is really the only guy who does what the Clippers need in terms of setting the table. So they absolutely have to have him at 100%. The Spurs are, if you go by that logic, then the Spurs are the front runner. Even though Tony Parker is aging, they have some other guys to try. Patty Mills, Manu, you know, maybe even a little bit of Kyle Anderson running the offense. And Kawhi can take a little bit more of the reins. And then the team that I would have as the other one in the conversation, though below the Spurs, is the Jazz. And the reason for that is that the Jazz have unusual strengths, and their weaknesses aren't as big of a deal against the Warriors because it's just not really where they're built. And what I mean by that is they have amazing point guard defense. You know, George Hill, Dante Exum, one of the best defensive combinations at the one in the league. They have size on the interior that is pretty mobile. Like, if they play favors at the five when they have to, they can do that. And they have a ridiculous amount of depth. So they can throw different players at the Warriors, and they can do a lot of different stuff. So their high-end talent isn't good enough. It's not like I would ever make them a favorite in that kind of a series, barring series injury. But they have a lot of the tools that you need to beat the Warriors, and they actually have some parallels to the Cavs in terms of the wing talent that gave the Warriors so much trouble in the last two finals to a degree.
I know you're high on the Jazz, and I like the Jazz, and I like their coach and staff, and they've done a nice job with that team. They got to make the playoffs before I can give them this kind of a push. And I think we need to see that team do something before I'm ready to put them in that kind of category. Now, I know I'm the person who's been saying that the Wolves are going to win 50 games this year, so maybe that's a double-sided argument. But I've seen the Jazz 2 years in a row, and we could say it's because of injuries or whatever, come up short late in the season and not get it done. And I have to see that team come into the season and play like a 50-win team before I'm going to put them in that kind of category. Even though I liked all the moves they made, I love them getting George Hill, I like their depth, I like their guys all up and down the roster, well, I've got to see them take that step now that they have it these last couple of years, if everyone's kind of looked at them as the it team, before I'm ready to say they're definitely going to be able to do that kind of stuff.
You may think that it's incongruous to feel that way about the Jazz and the Wolves, but I think it is. It does make sense, because the difference is that Minnesota is there for the first time, so you don't have that sort of precedent. So they can, you know, you see teams every once in a while. Oklahoma City, you know, once they kind of figured it out, they made a big jump.
And that's my comparison for them.
Yeah.
When the Thunder went from 23 to 50, I think the Wolves can go from 29 to 50.
Yeah, and they're also upgrading at coach. They're upgrading a coach. Tibbs is going to be awesome for them. And part of what there was this idea. It was part of the reason why I really liked Scott Skiles for Orlando last year. You know, that worked out how it worked out. But there are different reasons that a team's defense is bad. And for Minnesota, part of it for them, so they actually had their starting lineup was pretty good defensively especially when they had KG on the floor. KG is an underratedly awesome defender still, even though, you know, when he plays, he only plays like 15 minutes a game. And that allows Towns to do more of the Townsy stuff that we talked about. We ended up getting into on a sidetrack when we did the Power Forward podcast. But that allows him to do a little bit more of that without sacrificing rim protection. And so that is an important thing to think about, is that they had sieves like Wiggins, who should not be one, LaVine, who could be a lot better defensively than he is, and Shabazz Muhammad, who we don't know. You know, he's a bigger question mark in that, but who knows if he's going to be in their rotation. And part of what Tibbs deserves a lot of credit for throughout his tenure with the Bulls is that almost everybody defended well on those teams, even guys who weren't necessarily great defenders. And that is important. You know, Mirotić struggled a little bit, but I thought he did an all right job on that end. And, you know, McDermott has gotten a lot better. And while he wasn't the coach last year, I give Tibbs credit for that too. And so if those kind of improvements happen, And they got better from a talent perspective. They got older, so they got age-related improvement. I can see it. And with Utah, they improved from a talent perspective. But we've seen this dance before. And so that is a very important difference. And last year, they had this weird stretch. I mean, their point guard situation is separate. Like, their point guard situation was a disaster, and the same thing that sunk the Pelicans last year. But the problem, what was so hard for them, is that they had a stretch where both Favors and Gobert were out at the same time. And I think if that had been, if those had been staggered, as much as that would have meant larger combined absences, I think they would have been able to survive it because they just didn't have enough around it. You know, Lyles was young. Jeff Withey actually did a pretty good job. So, yeah, right. I think that's a fair point. But with the Wolves, in terms of the Warriors, that would be a fascinating series. Like, if I were to choose, unless Oklahoma City fell all the way to the 8 line, if I were to choose a 1-8 series, that's exactly what I would choose, though.
Yeah, that would be a heck of a series. That'd be a heck of a series. If they're not as good as I think they're going to be, but they're good enough to get in the playoffs, which is probably more likely, I mean, that would be a juicy series. I mean, Wolves-Warriors, because I would make the argument that I think in 2018 that they're the second best team in the West, and they have the pieces to play with the Warriors in a series in theory, and so you know that would be pretty juicy if we got a chance to see that this year. It's a precursor to what could maybe be, you know, a pretty massive series the following year with you know the Wolves going out and spending some money in free agency and then having their young guys kind of be ready to go in prime time.
And that actually, this might seem like a strange transition, but I think it'll make sense to you, is that one of the lingering kind of resonances of Kevin Durant's decision is that while the Bay Area isn't a small market by any means, it is notable anytime you see a high-end free agent change teams and not go to a major market. And why that made me think of it is because, you know, that's not the only way Minnesota can reach their ceiling, but it's certainly the most reasonable way would be for them to woo somebody. And so as somebody who's been more of a national figure the last couple of years, is that something that you see being more of a sea change around the league?
I guess I don't quite follow your premise. Do you mean that Kevin Durant didn't go to a major market?
Well, I mean, he didn't go to L.A., New York, Miami.
Kevin Durant went to a major market.
That's how you're seeing it?
I mean, I don't know how you couldn't see that. I mean, what is the Bay? I mean, the Bay Area in television size has got to be what? It's got to be top 10.
I think it's sixth or eighth or something like that.
Yeah, including San Fran and Oakland.
I think so. I think the Bay Area metropolitan area. I think it's something like sixth.
I'd be hard pressed to find anybody who doesn't think that San Francisco is a major American city.
That's true.
Kevin Durant didn't go sign in Minneapolis, you know? I mean, I think the only reason, like, because, like, San Francisco's got great weather. It's not like Boston. Like, to me, the more, like, it was more surprising to see Al Horford choose Boston than for Kevin Durant to choose San Francisco. You know what I mean? Because of the, I mean, it was more surprising to see a guy like Greg Monroe choose Milwaukee over L.A. and New York the year before.
Right.
But to your point, though, and I didn't mean to sidetrack you. I was just kind of laughing.
No, that's fine.
I think San Francisco is a huge market and a hugely desirable place to live for a lot of reasons. But I think you have seen the last couple of years, whether it was Monroe, even though it didn't necessarily work out that great for the Bucks. You look around and the guys want to win. And I think that guys look at the Timberwolves and they see Karl Towns and they see Andrew Wiggins and they see Zach LaVine and Ricky Rubio. And now they have Chris Dunn and they've got Tom Thibodeau and they're going to get guys to go play there. Like they are not going to struggle to get guys to go sign with them. I mean, you know, you look at Chandler Parsons going to Memphis. You look at Pau Gasol going to the Spurs. You look at LaMarcus Aldridge going to the Spurs over teams like the Lakers and the Knicks and the Bulls. I think the Bulls might have been interested in him. Like you look around and Dwight Howard going to Houston. I mean, guys aren't just going to L.A. and New York anymore in free agency. I mean, they're going everywhere. And when you look at the amount of talent the Wolves are going to have and the ability guys are going to go out to win and win big, I mean, the fact that Durant and Westbrook became such huge stars with the Thunder, I kind of, and LeBron is a huge star in Cleveland, and Kawhi with the Spurs, I think that's kind of broken the paradigm that, you have to be in a Golden State, in a San Francisco or in L.A. or Chicago or New York to be a huge star. And so I think guys want to go win. And I think that the Wolves, I think, are going to be a hugely desirable place for guys to go next summer because they're going to have everything else in place to be a really good team.
And to tie it back to the Warriors, something that might be harder for me to see as someone born and raised in the Bay Area and now living here as an adult is that the Warriors had a lot of trouble picking up major free agents throughout my lifetime. But a big portion of that is because they were terribly run. You know, like not only because they were going to win, but because the team was a disaster. You know, it was hard for the Clippers to pull free agents when Donald Sterling was their owner.
And look at the Lakers now, right? I mean, the Knicks now. I mean, those teams are having trouble signing guys because they're not good. And the Warriors have a great team. They got great guys to come there. Same with Boston. Same with Memphis. Like, if you have a good team, guys are going to want to come play there because everything else is kind of flattened out now.
And that's where
having Carl Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and Zach LaVine, and Chris Dunn, and Ricky Rubio makes you a really attractive place to play.
And that the last point is also very salient because teams like the Wolves and the Warriors this year have to take advantage of this window where the major market teams are being poorly run. Because the second they start figuring out how these advantages work and just really start to focus, I wrote a piece, I think, 2 or 3 years ago about how I wanted the Knicks to hire Daryl Morey because I thought his idea of asset management would be perfect for the Knicks. And there's a reason why it hasn't happened because of the way those teams' ownerships approach their teams themselves. But there is this window where there aren't that many that are the best of both worlds. And that's actually why I focused so much on the Durant to the Warriors idea was because there were so many arguments that they had on him and a lot of the traditional competitors weren't really that relevant.
No, I totally agree. The only problem is that it's hard to see how teams like the Knicks and the Lakers are going to really improve what they're doing anytime soon. So these teams might have a longer lease than they should, but yeah, I mean, it is pretty frustrating to look at some of these big market teams and see what they've done and just kind of go, man, when are you guys going to figure out that you've got these advantages and you've got all this stuff built in that should work in your favor and you still can't manage to take advantage of them.
And another huge advantage that the Warriors in their present assemblage have is that while the West is stacked with really good players, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them are in situations where it's very unlikely that they can become a title contender. And Anthony Davis on the Pelicans is probably the best example of this. Davis is an MVP caliber player when he can be on the floor, but for reasons that are not worth going into on a Locked On Warriors podcast, they aren't going to get there over the next couple of years, you know, unless they fall in the draft and get, you know, the next guy, you know, get somebody who is a star already, you know, who's going to be that guy. And so you have Towns there, or you have him there, you know, we'll see what happens with the Wolves. If they can nail it, then they could be the exception to this rule. Lillard on the Blazers, they're a very good team, but I don't think they're a title contender. Westbrook on the Thunder are largely in the same group. And so it's going to be hard for those teams to really put it together, and that means that you're looking for the Warriors, the teams that I think you're staring at in terms of the real threats, Minnesota, and then just maybe it's because I went to college in LA when they were good, but the possibility of the Lakers really figuring it out, getting lucky with Russell and all those guys hitting it and getting a max level guy. Like, really, those are the biggest threats other than, as you said, the Warriors themselves.
That's totally true. And it's you know, it's just funny. It's just funny how all this stuff is has just become as important as the actual games. But you know, it's just kind of the way these things have gone. We're now, you know, even in the wake of the Warriors signing Durant, it's just this you know, these kind of conversations are the ones that really are the ones that get people excited and drive the conversations about the league even more than the games they play. It's just interesting the way things have unfolded that way.
It helps when there aren't games to be played, but it is also something that matters. and when you are
these conversations get more juice in February than game stories do. It's just
that's true.
As somebody who's most read
article of his entire career is and probably will forever be a piece that had very little to do with actual games for a long time.
Right.
I can attest to that.
Yep, very true.
But yeah, I think you get into this situation, and you are a good person to talk with about this, and we've alluded to it a couple times about the idea of the CBA, the next CBA potentially being their enemy, and there are a couple of different ways they could do that, but what I keep thinking about is that this is a direct precedent to Miami and what happened in 2010 and then 2011.
Yep.
So in 2010, LeBron and Bosch signed with the Heat. In 2011, there's a new CBA. Owners and players try to do stuff to dissuade the next super team. They not only are unable to stop Miami from keeping it together, but they end up finagling the rules so that after Miami peters out through a kind of crazy circumstance, they enabled another super team to happen. And my instinct is, as we just kind of talked about with the Clippers that passed this prologue, is that that's what's going to happen again, is that they will intend to do something that will be harder for the Warriors. Maybe the most likely thing is that it will make it so that somebody has to do a financial sacrifice, and then it will have some weird spillover consequences that don't help the Warriors, but help the next Warriors become the team that takes the mantle in like 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, the only pushback I have on that, let me back up. I agree that I think it's very likely that the league side pushes for something draconian that tries to prevent the Warriors from sticking together. That's my personal theory on it. There's so many people from around the league that are so upset that the Warriors are able to get Kevin Durant on their team without having to sacrifice anybody of consequence that I could see them going out for blood and trying to find a way to change it. The only thing that I would push back on from this perspective, and it's not, I agree with you 100%, everything you said, about what they did with the Heat back in 2011, is that, like, let's just think about how this happened, right? The reason that the Warriors were able to put this together was because of a crazy influx of television money that the league tried to stop by advocating for this money to kind of be eased in over time, and that the union said no to a deal on that, which was in the union's interest. I mean, it wasn't in their interest. It just, that was what they decided to do. So I think that the system they put in place largely worked in terms of trying to prevent these kind of teams from getting together. I think it had weird consequences. Like, for example, the way the extension rules were set up basically prevented somebody from like LaMarcus Aldridge or Kevin Durant from signing with their teams before they hit free agency. Basically removed any incentive for a guy to avoid going on the open market, which I think was a mistake. But I do kind of wonder, because basically the biggest impediment really to all this was the implementation of repeater tax and luxury taxes. You know, that was what scared Miami off with the Mike Miller thing. Even the Brooklyn Nets under Mikhail Prokhorov were scared off by it. I don't know if anybody has actually paid the repeater tax yet. I think the Heat were supposed to, and then they got out of the tax.
I think the Clippers will this year, but it's going to be a little baby version of it.
They'll pay a tiny bit, right? So I do wonder, but to go all the way back to the beginning, I see all the same parallels as you. I think it's a reason why it's more likely than not we have a lockout. The most likely scenario to them trying to change this is to implementing some kind of a supermax, whether it's you can give one guy a gigantic contract, you can pay a guy 45% of the cap or something instead of 35 or 50%. And then all of a sudden, the Warriors might only be able to give that to one guy. And then which guy do you give it to? Then the other guy maybe can go get that 45 or 50% somewhere else. So it's hard to say exactly how that stuff is going to change between now and then. But I do agree that, given the amount of anger there is around the league about, for example, when Durant, I remember the morning of July 4th when the decision was announced that he was going there, I said my lead was for the Washington Post was the NBA has a new super team. And some of my friends at the league office were very upset about this, and they called me because they didn't like the word super team. They didn't like that phrase. We don't like the phrase. Well, no, I know. And that's what I said. Listen, you dopes, what do you want me to say? Like, they have four of the top 50 players in the league on a team. How is that not a super team? What do you want me to do? So I think if they can find a way to set the system up, and the Warriors are in a unique situation, right? Because, you know, Durant and Curry both will be free agents. So unlike that Miami team where they had that group locked in throughout those CBA negotiations, this time, you know, those two guys, the most important guys, are going to come up right as the CBA is negotiated. So it will be fascinating to see if the vast majority of the owners try to push for some kind of rules that make it hard for those two guys to stay with the Warriors.
The possibility of an increase to the max is the most likely way to do a lot of this, and it makes a lot of sense because it gets closer to something that the players are indicating, especially having more max-level guys in the head of the Players Association, which there are now than there were last time with LeBron and Chris Paul.
Yep.
And Michelle Roberts has already even floated the idea of having no max at all, which is not going to happen, but is kind of gives you an idea of that this is a
great... Well, I'll tell you what, Danny. See, that's the thing. I'm not so sure that's the case, because I think... If Michelle Roberts puts no max contract on no max salary on the table, I think that the league would want that personally.
I think what the league would say, we can do that if they put a hard cap, and thus the players will say no hard cap.
I disagree. I think the league would love for there to be no max salary, and here's why. If there's no max salary, then you're not paying guys like Timofey Mozgov $64 million. You're paying, it becomes like the NFL. You're paying LeBron $60 million, and you're paying the rest of your team $20 million. And I think that the owners would be fine with that, because they're spending the money the same way, but they're not spending giant gobs of money on guys that aren't any good. So I think it would be terrible for the union, because the fact that you have an artificially lowered max salary means that everybody else makes a lot more money. Like, you know, if there's no max salary, what is Kevin Durant getting? $50-60 million, maybe more. Same for LeBron, same for Steph Curry. All these guys are getting way more money than they're getting now, and all that money then goes to other players. If you don't have a max salary, then the superstar guys who are worth, you know, LeBron could be worth $100 million a year, the Cavs could be worth more than that. He gets all that money, and then everybody else is making the minimum. And that's why Michelle Roberts came in, and that was one of her first things. She's marching around saying that she's going to get rid of the max salary. And that, you know, maybe that's the case, but I think that the repeater tax has kind of become a hard cap. And I don't really think that, you know, I think the NBA has kind of gotten its hard cap without actually having to get it. And now because of that, they can work within that framework. And, you know, I think if a no max salary happens, you know, because, like, let's say they just remove the cap on the max salaries next year, right? I mean, are the Warriors going to pay Steph Curry and Kevin Durant $60 million a year? Probably not.
They should.
You know, are they both going to they should, but is Joe Lacob going to play $100 million in luxury taxes? Probably not. You know, again, he should, but, I'm not so convinced that isn't an option that they might try to pursue. And I think you make a great point. You know, I don't think it's really been talked about enough that the union, there's four superstar players in the executive committee: Chris Paul, LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, and Steph Curry. And all four of those guys, you know, even though three of them are getting older, I think all three of those guys would be pretty fine with the fact that you could just get paid whatever you wanted, because they would all get paid a ton of money. And, you know, I wonder if that's not something the league tries to do to try to combat. And that might be an effective way to mess with this Warriors team, too, if that's the avenue they want to try to go down.
While you were saying that, I had a kind of a spark, and it's really kind of interesting. And so there's a parallel. This is going to go back to 2011, which is that there is a very, very real downside to having the combination of no individual max salaries and a soft cap. That being that a team that was willing to do it could go completely nuts and could do something really crazy. However, thinking the way that ownership sometimes, the owners as a collective sometimes do, the teams that would be the most destructive to competitive balance with that structure are not in place to take advantage of it right now. You know, like, we're not sitting there saying, oh, man, look at the Lakers. Like, if the Lakers had not spent like crazy people this summer, they could have been in an amazing situation where they could have spent, you know, a ton of money on Russell Westbrook if, let's say, he hadn't signed the deal with OKC or Paul George, you know, whoever that guy is. They could have done that. And then they could have re-signed all their own players. Like, that's why that combination can be so devastating. But the Knicks just spent, you know, a ton of ridiculous money. The Nets aren't good. The Clippers are in a pit anyway. Like, they're a great team, but it's going to be hard for them to get better. And so, like, maybe they're not thinking about that event. Well, eventuality is too strong a term for it, but that possibility, because the teams that we think of as being most likely to do it, and from a practical perspective, like, there are other owners that I think would do it if the opportunity presented itself, Mark Cuban being the most obvious, but
right.
There aren't enough players so far. They haven't been able to pull those max-level guys, you know, like true max, not Harrison Barnes max, but like max, you know, top 15 players in the league, to make them relevant to be concerned about. You know, the next Warriors are a team to worry about, whoever that team is, but it has to be the next Warriors, and they have to have the right ownership, because there are certain owners in this league that, even if that opportunity presented itself, absolutely would not pay it.
I think it's a lot more than certain owners. I think it's just about all owners.
I think it's at least I think it's about 20, maybe more than 20.
I think it's more like 30, honestly. Like, you're not going to find, there are very few teams that are going to be willing to spend $190 million on a team. So far, there have been two. So, and one of them was the Nets, and the other was the Cavs. And the Cavs had LeBron. They hadn't won a championship in 50 years. So, I think, you know, there are not, like, Joe Acob, I do not think, would pay $200 million to have a salary for an NBA team. I don't. If the salary cap's $180 million in the future, that's one thing. But I think right now, when the salary cap's around $100, I don't think he's paying twice the cap for a team. I just don't see it.
Yeah, it's an open question. And it also gets into this idea that whatever you think in terms of, like, you know, the Warriors are, in terms of profit this year, are going to be ludicrous. Because
they're going to make a ton of money. Right.
Because they're going to be below the luxury tax. And they're going to be, you know, they're selling out everything. Unfortunately for the Warriors, I don't know when they can renegotiate their TV deal, but I think it's not for another couple of years. So they don't get that sort of revenue. But everything else, you know, gate, concessions, merchandise, everything else that they can do, they're going to maximize to the hilt. And the revenue side is only going to increase, you know, especially when they move into the new arena, whenever that is, 2030, 2035, or whatever it is. But
right.
I think that it is fair to say that those profits are not, you don't sit there and go, oh, well, we made an extra $50 million last year off of what we should have paid, so we're going to throw that into the player salary this year. Like, that's just not the way these sorts of things work, especially because that's
these guys don't make billions of dollars by mistake.
Right.
All these owners make billions of dollars because they're smart and they know how to make money.
And this is exactly why you and I are both lockout pessimists, because this is exactly the same reason why there could be a lockout.
I think here's the thing. There should not be a lockout.
No.
Both sides are doing incredibly well. There are a couple things from the last CBA that need to be fixed. I think the extension rule needs to be fixed. I think the draft pick salaries need to be increased. There's some little things that need to be done here and there, but the system that's in place for 98% of it works pretty great. And the league is in great shape and maybe a stronger position than it's ever been. And everybody should say, hey, we got a golden goose here. Let's keep on letting it pump out golden eggs. Let's all keep making money. But the players have an executive director, Michelle Roberts, that's been, you know, a firebrand since she came in, and she's trying to keep the troops happy. And she was brought in to get them more money. And I'm concerned that the players are going to come in and say, we want to get back to 57% of basketball-related income, where they were before the last lockout. Now they're down around 50 or 51. And I think the owners are going to say, we just spent all this damn money last summer on guys like Timothy Mozgov and Joakim Noah and all these guys that are old and not that good or just not that good, period, and all these crazy contracts. And, like, we can't have this. and go in and say, we're going to offer you guys, the owners are going to offer you players 40% of BRI. And we get stuck right back in the same situation we were in 6 years ago, instead of just saying, hey, things are great. Let's fix these things on the margins. Just keep on rolling and printing, you know, just printing money. Because that's what we're doing right now, is just printing money every day. I hope that cooler heads prevail. Sanity reigns, and this is what happens. But, you know, this is the real test for Adam Silver, is, you know, a guy who's basically done nothing wrong to this point. Can he get the owners to understand that things are in great shape right now, and there's no reason to go crazy trying to change all the rules, and let's just try to keep it the same, and let's just keep this ball rolling forward. And, you know, I certainly hope, as a basketball fan, that they're able to do that, and that this positive momentum that the league has generated doesn't get stunted by anything.
If Commissioner Silver and or Michelle Roberts listen to this podcast, and I'll probably say this until people tell me they've heard it too much, they should spend all of the time that is remaining between now and the opt-out negotiating exactly one thing. And I mean this specifically, literally.
Here's the only thing I'll say, because this has come up a few times. The both sides are going to opt out on December 15th.
Yes.
So when one side or both sides opt out, there are going to be a lot of people freaking out about, oh no, they opted out, there's going to be a lockout. That's not the lockout deadline.
No.
The real deadline, and I'm just saying this for
education,
anybody listening.
Yeah.
The deadline is June 30th. So don't for anybody listening that's worried about a lockout, do not pay any attention when you hear that, you know, the league and or the players opt out in December, because they've always been planning on opting out. They're going to have a new agreement. Whether it comes before or after July 1st is the question.
Yeah, so agreed, and that is a great point to make. I'm very happy you did. My overarching thing is that as much as there are other issues, and you brought up a few of the very good ones that they need to fix and they need to discuss, they should discuss absolutely nothing. And I do not mean this in a loose sense. I mean this in a literal sense. They should discuss absolutely nothing until they figure out share of BRI. Because everything else hinges on that. And if they can settle that before June 1st, they can figure everything else out in less than a month. They can figure everything else out in a week. But BRI split, if they don't resolve that, it is what will cause any sort of lockout. The only other thing that really could is the possibility of a hard cap, and that should kind of maybe go along a little bit with BRI. But you have to start there, because that's the crux of all this stuff.
Right. Well, to be fair, that's basically what they always do. I mean,
yeah.
They, like, 99% of the CBA negotiations are just going around in circles about BRI. Like, the other stuff gets discussed, and that it's all basically, it's all right, we're not getting anywhere right now in the money. Let's go talk about some other things, then we'll come back to the money. I mean, at the end of the day, the money is the thing that's always driving the entire conversation. And the other stuff, there are differences of opinion on the other stuff, but the other stuff everybody can deal with basically in a civil way, because it's all stuff that largely is about trying to improve the game for everybody. And, like, for example, the last time, the reason that some of these lockout, like the extension rule, was immediately bad, and it was immediately obviously bad, and that was one of those things that was just kind of thrown in at the end, and we have to figure something out, so they figured something out. But it wasn't, that's because they figured out the money, and then they had to go, all right, well, we got to come up with everything else, because now we have to have a season. So, you know, the money is always the biggest hurdle, and the other stuff is always kind of window dressing around it. So yeah, that's how it's going to go. And here's to hoping that both sides will allow sanity to reign and have this thing get wrapped up before July 1st. So I don't have to spend next summer back in New York standing on street corners.
Yeah, as much fun as that sounds. So I think where we'll end this for now is, are there, outside of the stuff we've discussed, and, you know, that's of course plenty, are there any other kind of smaller things, something that you've noticed and care about that you would love to be fixed or adjusted in the new CBA?
Well, I think that there needs to be, I think that this new CBA needs to get the D League to 30 teams, and I think it needs to radically change the cost structure of the D League to make it a true minor league and a viable, a viable thing for everybody in the league. I think it'd be a really good thing for the NBA. I think it'd be a really good thing for the D League. I think it'd be really good for the players. So I think that includes a lot of stuff, from two-way contracts, rosters a little bit, to paying the D League players more money, to all that kind of stuff. But getting to 30 teams, getting everybody an affiliate, you know, it might take a couple of years to implement it, but I think this new CBA, I think outside of the money, the most important thing I think for the long-term growth of the league is to get a viable, to give these younger players a chance to grow and develop and really establish a true minor league for the NBA.
Yeah, we're in agreement on that in terms of it being an important part of the league, and I think they're getting closer to an idea of what that's going to look like, which is definitely an important step.
No question. They're definitely making progress on it, and I think a lot of people think that that's going to happen in this negotiation anyway, is they're going to kind of hammer some of that stuff down, hammer some of that stuff out. So I would think the way the league is progressing, by 2020 at the latest, we're going to have a 30-team D league for sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for taking the time.
Hey, Danny, happy to do it, man. Anytime.
Thanks again to Tim Bontemps for taking the time. You can read him in the Washington Post, still feels cool to say, and you can follow him on Twitter at Tim Bontemps. That's TimBontemps. Really enjoyed having this conversation with him. It was it's always good to talk shop with Tim and really get into some different things, and we have a lot of free flowing things in terms of conversation, so, you know, riffing off each other and finding everything like that. So I hope you enjoyed it. It was fun to do, and now that he's in the Bay Area, my sincere hope is that we can talk more often in the daily format of this podcast. Should open it up, and I want to have a mix of local, national voices, but the real priority for me is smart people who know what they're talking about. That's the priority. I don't focus as much on where their allegiances are or who they write for or anything like that. All of those things are window dressing, as opposed to whether I feel that everybody can gain something from the conversation, and that really is what it is always about for me. If you have any input, you can reach out to me at Danny LaRoux on Twitter, DannyLeroux, or you can email me at DannyLaRouxNBA@gmail.com. You could also reach out, if you prefer, to Locked On Warriors as the podcast, LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com. You can follow it on Twitter at Locked On Dubs, or go to Facebook, Locked On Warriors. And I'm going to try to do better at updating those and keeping it clear. So if you'd rather just know when episodes come out, you can do that. But the best way to know when episodes come out is to subscribe to the podcast using whatever you use. I will mention now, I haven't mentioned on this podcast, that I use Overcast. That is my player. I really do enjoy it. Because like you can make it a little bit faster, and while that can be hard for me because I talk fast, so if you're listening to my show, that can be bad. It can be harder, let's say. It is very good for a lot of things because you can listen to, depending on how comfortable with speed you are, you know, you can listen to an hour show in 45 minutes or thereabouts, and so you have to listen a little bit more closely, but I'm cool with that. So if you like that, I really love Overcast. It's one of those things that I've gotten adjusted to over the last year or so and legitimately enjoy. For those of you who are football fans, since this is the last episode of Locked On Warriors for this week, now is a great time to check out Locked On 49ers and or Locked On Raiders, because they both have games this weekend and they do really good work there. And so if you are listening to football stuff, you can get a real good preview of the game now, and then by the time our episode comes out, should be pretty close in line with a recap, and that's always fun. So you should definitely check those out. And there are Locked On podcasts all over basketball and football. So if you are a transplant in the Bay Area, or you have conflicted allegiances, isn't really right, but you have varying allegiances geographically, let's put it that way, it is a great thing for you because you can keep up with it if you are in a different place or anything like that. And I highly do recommend it because they're doing great work. And you can also check out Locked On NBA, which is David Locke's awesome podcast. And for those of you that are interested in my work, I recently wrote a piece for The Athletic, which is another alternate version of the Media Day podcast, if you listen to that, with the sound, something that I'm working on for The Athletic that I think is going to be a really fun addition over the course of it, is having audio to really enliven the picture with that. And one of the limitations of the written word is that it can't convey that. So that is a hope. Also had an over-under podcast with Arturo Goletti of Basketball Numbers for the Eastern Conference. The Western Conference one is recorded but not yet edited. That should come out on Sunday or Monday, so right around the time the next Locked On Warriors will be out. And then I have a new piece for the Sporting News, which is out, and then By the time many of you listen to this, I should hopefully have a new piece on Real GM as well, which is on the designated player, continuing my CBA encyclopedia set of pieces. And so another thing you can look at, especially for those of you who are Redditors, my friend Adam Mares, who works for Denver Stiffs, who writes for Denver Stiffs, has done a thing that he calls the Basketball PhD Program, which is basically compilations of people that are worth following on Twitter. I'm honored to be a part of it, but it is a great way, if you're trying to, you know, think about who's worth following, to give those lists a look. And he splits it into various topics, including the Warriors, but also X's and O's and analytics and a bunch of other different topics that you might be interested in. And so part of making the most out of something like Twitter is finding the right people and distilling the right people so that you have the right timeline. So you should definitely give that a look. I've also retweeted it from my account, so if you want, you can see it there as well. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.